Shout out to our sponsor, Sugar House Distillery. Handcrafted from grain to glass, Sugar House has been grinding for years to bring us products that are quality over quantity. Just to name a few, their single malt whiskey, rye whiskey, which is our weekday jam, their Boilermaker series, which is a rotating collab within our family, and their canned cocktails, which are so damn good and great for any to-go adventures you have this year. Located in most liquor stores across Utah, or just head over to the distillery located on 22nd 12 South West Temple, Monday through Friday. Tell them we sent you, and they'd love to give you a tour and possible tasting. When you think Sugar House Distillery, think local and made with love. Until the next spirit, my friends. Shout out to our sponsors, King's Peak Coffee Roasters. Located on 412 South 7th West in Salt Lake, King's Peak has a wonderful coffee shop and roastery with great atmosphere, delicious coffee, friendly baristas, and plenty of parking. Offering to help anyone willing to learn coffee, King's Peak is the place to go. King's Peak is ethically and sustainably sourced, believing that everyone in the coffee supply chain should be properly supported through fair compensation and powered by real human-to-human relationships. Open Monday through Friday, 7 to 2, and Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 2, you will feel loved the moment you walk through their doors. For any questions or inquiries, or wholesale, visit them at kingspeakcoffee.com or just head on over. Good chance you'll see us there. Until the next coffee, my friends. Listening to the Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, family, here in the house, Sugar House, with my friend James Fowler. God damn, James, how you doing?
Good. I'm doing really good,
dude. We've been trying this forever, man. Yeah. And finally, we get to sit down. I'm in your barrel room. It smells awesome. It looks great, man. Thanks for being here today. Yeah.
No, thank you. I remember first time I met you, it was almost a year ago at Brew Distillery.
Yeah.
So that was a year ago, right?
Yeah, it's coming up. In June, right? Beginning of June?
Yep.
Yeah, so talk to us through that day. Do you remember that day when you first met me?
The wind. Our tank got blown down.
We got smoked.
I met Chad Hopkins for the first day. That was awesome being next to him at the event. But it was a busy day.
It was a busy day. You got a lot of eyes on you that day.
Yeah.
Because you showed up a little bit late, right?
Yeah, we came and set up, and then, I got the phone call, like, hey, your tent just, like, snapped in half. And then it's like, oh, what do we run totally to Home Depot, get some duct tape? Like,
no, it snapped in half on me.
Yeah, and then we took bottle openers and duct tape, and we strengthened the poles with the bottle openers, wrapping the duct tape around it. So let me say, we have a very nice brand new tent.
Did you not cheap out on the tent?
We did not cheap out on the tent.
That was my favorite, because sitting there helping Chad, and all of a sudden your tent just eats shit. Just up and goes.
Yeah.
And I remember when you showed up, like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
Anyway, are you going to be at Brew Distillery again this time?
Yeah, my wife and I are going to do it.
Hell yeah. How's your wife doing, by the way?
She's awesome.
Good, because I feel like she's the actual boss here.
Yeah, she is.
She does like 5 jobs at home, then she comes and does this. Yeah. Does she ever sleep? When's the last time you took her on vacation?
It's been a while. I will say, we went to Maui for 10 days. We came home for a week, and we went to Maui with our kids, and then we went with our friends to Costa Rica for 2 weeks.
Oh, hell yeah.
So it was like a 5-6 week period that was like, this is how life should be.
Right.
Like, it was amazing. But that's been a year and a half.
Okay.
So we need a
vacation. You guys are due for one.
Yeah.
You should make it like a 3 weekend, man.
I know.
Just go do a staycation somewhere.
Yeah.
Just go get a hotel room down in South Utah.
We did that, but.
What did you?
Yeah, a Sundance, but I worked.
It doesn't count, James.
Yeah, I know.
All right, James. So I want to talk about the Sugar House game. So I love Sugar House. Everyone loves Sugar House. You're doing cool things. You guys have a great setup, great lineup. Why start Sugar House? Give me the origin story. Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of it started around 1990. Grew up pretty religious family. not pretty, extremely religious family.
Very Amish.
Yeah, Amish here in Utah. And, you know, just quickly started exploring and it was like, I love beer, you know. And I mean, these are the days Red Rock was getting going, Uinta, Wasatch, and, you know, just started falling in love with beer. It's like, this is so good. And started homebrewing a lot.
Oh, did you?
Homebrewed.
In the 90s?
Yeah, oh. Early 90s. And Jay was the manager over at Beer Nut. And it was awesome. I'd go in there. I'd be like, what do I need? What do I need? You know, and he's like, just find some old farm equipment, some like dairy equipment, you know. And because it was always like I wanted to upsize. I wanted to go bigger. And we, you know, I had these parties at my house. New Year's was always known.
Ooh,
that everybody went to James's house. I would have, you know, a stout, a Hefeweizen. You know, back then things weren't so crazy with the beer styles, but we would have quite a few different beer styles.
I love that.
And it was all just 5-gallon kegs, and that's what everybody knew on holidays, that's to come over to my house, and that's how it was. So I brewed for a long time, homebrewed, and the corporate world just kind of kept me kind of grounded of, you know, my passion is brewing, you know, making things. And, you know, after a while, it's just like, I want to go out and do my own thing. I really want to do my own thing.
Yeah.
So during the Olympics, I had some friends that were really pushing me to open a brewery, and they had done some restaurants, and they were like, come on, team up. I didn't have the balls to do it.
Mm.
And so it took quite a while. I went to work. I was working with Dow Corning, and that corporate America just kind of started taking it all out of me.
Mm.
It was just like, I want to do what I enjoy.
And this was early 2000s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I really started kind of in the early days, kind of knowing I want to do a distillery. You know, at that point, I mean, believe it or not, I'm like, oh, breweries are like so done. And I mean, this is the days when, you know, very few people had heard of Tito's or, you know, some of those first people that really started coming around.
Yeah.
And I was like, I started getting in more into whiskey. I had drank spirits when I was younger, and like a typical, you know, I had some bad days with them. And at the same time, the quality may not have been to what I like to drink today.
Yeah.
And it took me, you know, till I got a little bit older to realize like, hey, there's some really good bourbon out there. There's some really good scotch out there. There's some really good, you know, that it really made me open my eyes to a good quality product.
Yeah.
And then getting older, I had a harder time drinking beer. You know,
liked it, but didn't like you.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I just fill up, and so that bourbon started to just become like, oh, this is my drink, you know? And we moved down to Texas for, you know, a few years. And that's really when things started going crazy.
Hell yeah, some good bourbon out there.
Yeah. And then I started, you know, going into more distilleries at that point and seeing things. And it really just got the wheels turning.
When did Sugar House open?
So we officially opened in 2013. We started distilling January 1st of 2014.
Okay, cool.
So we've, you know, we're 9 years, coming up on 10 years here pretty soon.
Oh, snap. Are we going to have a 10-year anniversary party? You got to blow that shit up. Let's go, James.
I know.
Let's go.
It's hard because it's right around the holiday.
Who cares?
But I'm like, maybe we do like
if you build it, they should come.
I get it.
Do you like the end of January?
Yeah.
Like a pseudo.
Yeah.
Who's gonna actually give you the day? Oh, it's on the 1st.
I know. Come on, man. Yeah.
I think you should because it's important.
But we could go back to the original day that we opened. And back then, it wasn't easy. The federal government still wanted to come out and inspect your facilities. You know, things were different. Now you have a phone. You send in, you get approved. They call you. They may talk about a few things. But back then, they would actually send somebody out and look at the facility and stuff like that. So it's changed a lot, you know, even since we opened.
So when you opened, what other distilleries were around here in Utah?
So it was High West and Ogden Zone. And then it's kind of funny. Us and Beehive, I don't know. We were both number three. Beehive got their federal license maybe 3 weeks before us. We got our state license about 3 minutes before them. So,
so it's a tie.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. Do you guys often get confused with Beehive?
Yeah, we get people all over here all the time and say, we love your gin. It's like, yeah, we don't make gin. Maybe.
They probably say something about Sugar House over there all the time. Yeah, I love that. So what products do you offer here at Sugar House?
So we do vodka. We have our silver gold rum. We have our bourbon, rye whiskey, malt whiskey. We're doing canned cocktails. The raspberry lemonade and the whiskey sour are the two most popular.
I saw that.
Those are kind of what we're rolling
They're dangerous,
with.
Right?
They are dangerous.
Yeah, so you got into the RTD game real quick, right?
Yeah, we did. We need to generate some money other than barrels sitting in a warehouse for 6 to 8 years.
Yeah.
So it's a good way to do it.
So this is sexy and this goes and the kiddos like it. And
yeah.
Do you like it?
I wasn't happy at all about doing it. I'm surprisingly surprised how many canned cocktails I probably drank over the last year.
So is there going to be a new lineup? Because you only have the three, right?
Yeah. No, we have... so we have the raspberry lemonade vodka. We have the whiskey sour. We have the vodka tonic. And then we have a whiskey cola and a rum and cola.
Gotcha.
And the whiskey is really, really hard. It is almost impossible to get on the open market nowadays. And so you're starting to see distilleries just not offer repackaged whiskey anymore. And we have gone through a ton of really good, high quality whiskey going into canned cocktails. And it just makes me cry every time that we dump a barrel and it's like, this is going into a canned cocktail.
Soda water.
And so I've just said, you know, let's make the whiskey sour and let's leave it at that. And we have never sourced a drop of whiskey here until about 2 weeks ago for the canned cocktails.
Damn.
And that's the only thing that we'll source anything for.
Does that grind your soul a little bit? It really has.
Oh, it really has been the hardest thing ever.
Yeah, you try because you guys have been really good to grain to glass here at Sugar House.
Yeah,
since day one.
Yeah, everything we do is grain to glass.
So, what's it about grain to glass that's better than neutral grain spirits?
Everything. You know, really terroir. It means so much. I want to taste what you know your environment has. The weather patterns that we have. You know, was it a rainy season? Was it dry? Being the owner, I kind of remember different batches and kind of see the results of those things. I've heard some people say that Utah is a terrible place to age whiskey. Utah is a freaking amazing place to age whiskey. On flavor, my accountant would probably say, come on, James, that's terrible. Like, you lose so much money aging whiskey here because it's so dry. But we dry out that wood and we lose a lot of alcohol compared to Kentucky. Kentucky will lose about 6%. We lose about 14 to 18% in a barrel.
Damn.
So we lose a lot more. But with those barrels drying up, we get to the sugar, we get to the tannin, we get all the way through that barrel and it flavors so much better. Like, I mean, I just can't even, you know, when I hear things like that, I'm just like, or, you know, you can only age whiskey in Kentucky or something like that. It's like, that is so not true.
And let them do it.
Yeah, there's so many reasons. Yeah. You know, we have, you know, James Weed gave me a commercial humidifier and we tried to run it and keep it at, you know, 40% humidity in our barrel room. But let me tell you, the quality just started going down. Like it's
really?
Seriously. Yeah. The yield started going up, but that's not, you know, the yield isn't what I'm worried about. The quality is really what I want.
Yeah.
And so it was like, we're shutting that off. We're going to go back to, you know, there's no temperature in here. We want it hot in the summer and we want it really cold in the winter. And we want those weather changes to affect our barrels.
Yeah, the barrel to go in and out, right? And then there's another thing you guys put on your bottles. What's that regulation? The cool like term? It's like the purity law in beer, but it's for... I talked to Tui and Harley about it.
On the bottling statement?
Let's see. There's one. I'm going to find it. It starts with a B.
Oh, bottled in bond?
Bottle in bond. Yeah. Tell me about that again.
So a bottled in bond means, so it was a government way it's kind of funny because they wanted to oversee making of alcohol, but with you being in the industry, you know that they oversee us like way too much of mm-hmm. how we make our alcohol. But they wanted to oversee it, and then they have regulations on it. So it has to be 4 years old. It has to be off the same distilling season. So a distilling season, I think, is January 1st to June 1st.
Okay.
And then, so whatever you distill in that 6 months, that can be vatted together. And then that the next 6 months is another distilling season. It's got to be 100 proof. So our normal spirits are all 92, but it's got to be 100. And then it has to have that statement on there that it is under the close eye of the federal government, of them overseeing how the spirit was made.
Yeah.
And so it is, it's kind of a specialty, you know, it is a special thing. Our bottled and bond, I think we sold out in like 4 hours.
Wow.
Like it was gone. It was gone really, really quick.
Damn.
So,
and then you guys have also done the Boilermaker series.
Yeah. So the Boilermaker, is probably the most fun series that we do.
Why is that?
Because it's working with local people, and I mean, it's everything. Like, you know, we take a local beer barrel, and maybe not always a local beer, because we have, you know, Mountain West Cider right here. And we take our finished bourbon, and then we'll go ahead and age it in there. And, you know, each one is just so unique. We had a tasting maybe 6 months ago. And we just went through the Boilermaker series. And it was the funnest thing, because some of these bottles, you definitely can't get them anywhere anymore. And I, you know, I maybe have 4 or 5 bottles or something of most of the batches. Yeah. And so it was neat to go through. This Uinta was the Cockeyed Cooper, and they had dry hopped the barrel. And I remember we had very little bourbon. And at the time we were selling into Idaho, and Idaho sent us a purchase order for bourbon. And I said, you know what, let's just put like 5 or 6 gallons in the barrel and let's see what it does. And Richard, our old distiller, put the flashlight in there and he's like, hey, there's all these like oil, like there's, it's like there was oil in the barrel. And so Isaac was the brewer you in at the time. I call Isaac and he's like, oh yeah, it's because it's got hops in there. We dry hop that barrel. So he's like, that's what you're seeing. It's just the hop oil. And so then I come back, Richard's like, oh, I filled the barrel all the way. And I'm like, you did what? You put 53 gallons of whiskey? Like, that was our Idaho order. So I had to call Idaho basically and say, sorry, we don't have any whiskey.
Oops.
And we kind of thought that we probably did the wrong thing at the time. And it's just such a unique spirit. Like, that malt comes through so nice. The dry hops, with them putting the hops in the barrel, that floral comes through really, really nice. And immediately I'm like, I'm in love with this. Like the beer's coming through, you got the bourbon, you know, it's just, it's a fun series. And then just to work with everybody, right up here is our next, that's the Uinta Baba is, and we-
Oh, the Imperial Baba?
Yeah, we haven't done two barrels. This is the first time we're doing. So that will be about 1,000 bottles somewhere in there. So we want to have it for a little bit. Because normally it
does. I've heard secrets about this. I've heard this has been here. So that's where they are. So now I know where to come steal them.
Yeah. They're right up there. And then the other cool thing is we go into a char level 3 almost on everything.
Oh, cool.
And those are a char level 4. And I didn't realize that actually until about 2 months that they'd been in here. And I was walking. I'm like, hey, I think you can see right on the end. Or maybe it's right on the bottom here. And it says char level 4. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, I've wanted to try something in the char level 4. So
I feel like a lot of your fun ones have been almost not... They're accidentals.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. Almost everything is. You know, getting into some really fun stuff. Like, you know, James Weed, hiking up in the Uintas, getting some peat.
Yeah.
You know, smoking that. We have some whiskey, I think it's 4 years old, 5 years old, of that smoked peat whiskey. We put it in used barrels. You know, we could never call it a Scotch. We could never call it an Irish whiskey, but it's done very similar. We also distilled it a little bit higher than what you do in America. So 160 proof is what you distill in America. So we distilled it like 170, 171, something like that. And it's fun to get in. Like I totally dig, but likewise, it's in a used barrel. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe we'll let this sit in here for 10 years or 15 years.
Yeah.
You know?
So what's the oldest barrel you have in this barrel room?
Probably 7 or 8 years.
Damn.
And I think that we have something to taste that is, this might be 8-year-old whiskey right here. And this is actually, so this was 6-year-old whiskey. This was 6-year-old malt whiskey. And we put it in a used wine barrel. And it comes from out of Napa, Buckland. And they have an amazing wine.
Isn't the red wine, the Buckland red wine? It's like a rosé almost?
No, it's actually a blend of wines. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Yeah, I can't remember. But it is. So it's got some Malbec. It's got some Chardonnay. It's got some different things that of the grapes that they put into that wine. And this is from that. So this was 6-year-old, and then I think we've been in that barrel for 2 years. So this is about 8-year-old. That's also, we proofed it the other day. We're about 150 proof there. So that is, you might even want to take a touch of water.
A skosh.
And splash it in there. And it's kind of fun. I mean, you might want to taste it. It doesn't drink like 150 proof at all. I mean, it will definitely drink more like 110, 120.
It's got a sweet nose. Is that just me?
Yeah. No, and that's the malt. The malt is really malted barley. Is amazing. It's good.
It's like a sweet nose.
So now put just a little bit of water in. And it will just open it up just a teeny bit.
I have RO water here, James.
That's awesome.
Not your peasant water.
Yeah, I know. My Kirkland.
Oh, you're name dropping.
Yeah. Only the finest, though.
Only the finest.
Isn't that crazy? That wine comes through so nice. That sweetness, those grapes.
Holy smokes.
So this will probably be one of our next releases in the next little while.
Holy cow.
Why does
the water do that?
So the water is going to start breaking down those chains, and it really does change it. Anytime you buy a bottle of whiskey and you don't like it, I mean, and I would never tell somebody how to drink their whiskey, rocks, water, neat,
right,
cocktail. That's up to you. But really, if you buy a bottle and you drink it neat and you don't like it, a lot of times I'll put a little bit of water in it, or I'll put an ice cube in it. And that's not normally how I drink my whiskey, but sometimes all of a sudden it's like, oh, that really changed that. Huh. And it's a lot better now. And if I ever were to drink that whiskey again, that's probably how I would drink it.
Interesting. You know, I mean, you're like the grapes. I get a lot more grapes in that.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I remember last time I put it with Harley. Harley had he had a little barrel strength whiskey, and he's like, I'll put a little water in it real quick.
Yeah.
And I didn't ask why, but I just did as I was told.
Yeah.
And it was even better.
Yeah. And, you know, some people really, really like high proof, and we may leave that. Like, we may sell some bottles at, like, cask strength even, and then sell some at 100 proof. We're not quite sure how we're going to do this yet. We have a barrel. We have 2 barrels of malt. We have a barrel of rye. We have a barrel of bourbon. And the other thought is to release them in, like, a 3-pack. So Ooh. You'd get the malt, bourbon, and rye with that. And they're all
try them side by side.
Yeah, they're all in the same wine barrels. And so it would just be nice to exactly try them side by side.
I tell you what, I like the wine barrel game. You guys, a lot of individuals in the industry have been doing wine barrels.
Yeah.
And I'm a sucker for the wine barrels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm totally on board with you. And our Barrel Master series is exactly that. And normally it has been wine barrels. But this is something really crazy. So this was a mezcal barrel.
Where'd you get that barrel from?
Oaxaca.
Did you get from the Mexican government? Like, you went through Mexico, or did you go through a broker?
No.
Get out of here.
So, never mind.
Never mind. TBD.
There might be a trip to El Paso pretty soon. But I was told, I was basically told, like, it's too hard because a lot of times they're going to spray them down, or they're going to make them be cleaned.
Damn.
And they were like, we want some of your barrels, and you want some of our barrels. And we'll just do an exchange. So
gotcha.
I'm looking forward to a trip down some sometime soon.
I love that nose, by the way.
So this is a group of friends that I've got to know in the last little while. And they wanted to do a special barrel. And this is also probably about 140, 150 proof. This I like drinking with just a little bit of water in it.
I'm going to try it before the water.
Yeah, try it before. I think the mezcal is going to come through a little bit better with just the drop.
Wow, that's a spicy boy.
Ooh. So all of our stuff is on grain. And notice the mouthfeel. Notice the viscosity.
Mm-hmm.
We want that flavor to like stick in your mouth.
It's still there. It's like almost gummy.
Yeah, exactly. And it better be good whiskey because it's sticking around. And we want it like the way that I kind of evaluate whiskey is immediately, what am I tasting? Is it burning in the front? Is it burning in the back? Is it drying out my mouth? Is it 5 seconds in? What do I have? 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. You know, the flavor should change a little bit. There shouldn't be any voids. Francis is big in the industry. He's our rep. He calls them donuts. You don't want a donut where you taste it, it just goes nothing, and then you taste it again. You want just a nice flavor all the way through. And doing on-grain distillation really helps with that. That keeps the oils. It keeps the viscosity.
Right. So you're not cheating and getting the, not that it's those who do, hey, yeah. Do you, but you're not doing that.
Well, people want a chill filter. Yeah, exactly. That's up to them. They can, you know, they can chill filter, but we do try to do the least amount of filtering as possible.
So before when I had the beginning mouthfeel, it left my mouth, like the front of my mouth tingling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try it with the water now. My sophisticated water, James.
Yeah. is the mezcal coming through a lot better?
Way coming, yeah.
Yeah, isn't
You're totally right.
That is so good.
Wow.
Yeah, I got into that barrel about a week and a half ago, and I love it.
Do you think that's done, or is that going to be...
I don't know.
Sit on that a little bit.
It's a private barrel, so they're going to pick. I want to say... it becomes 6 years old in July. So my guess is they won't
choose. So could I theoretically buy a barrel and store it here? You and I.
You probably could.
Gotcha. that's all I want to talk about.
We're having a really hard time because we're getting our door knocked down with people trying to order barrels.
Mm.
And we're not being selective, but the way that our regular production goes, we need old whiskey.
Mm.
We need some older whiskey. And so I don't want to jeopardize our older stuff for our day-to-day bourbon, our day-to-day, you know, rye whiskey.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the tough thing. And so we did a barrel for Sundance and Robert Redford. It was called the Redford Reserve. And this is his friends. And I don't know if they're trying to one-up him or what, but it was kind of like, hey, you know, we want a barrel.
See, I tell you what. So Bob, he drinks tequila is his jam.
Yeah.
The Redfords love tequila. Yeah. So I tell you what, this is probably why. They're probably trying to showcase, watch what a mezcal barrel can do. That's probably why. That's my guess.
I want to say Amy was in here, his daughter, maybe 2 weeks ago or something
like
that.
And did you try her?
I didn't even have her try it.
Let me hit her. You got to bring her back because she would lose her mind.
You worked there.
Yeah. So I was the private bartender for the Redford family. For
You probably know a lot of the guys buying this.
Probably. We'll talk after this. But and that's why now you said that, I'm like, I guarantee I know why.
Yeah.
I guarantee. I'll put money on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is really good though. Like, can I get more of that earthiness of the agave?
Yeah.
It's like it's right there.
Yeah.
Like, it's beautiful.
So that's a fun
that's really
barrel
cool.
Right there.
Really cool.
I'm a little bit sad.
Yeah, to get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, and it's theirs. You know, it's like I don't feel right. And I'll probably try to take a few bottles, try to get some, but at the same time.
Because you mentioned production. You guys are ramping up. You guys are kicking ass lately in production. I feel like you guys are nonstop, and I feel like I've saw more staff members here recently. So talk to me about production real quick. How's that going for you?
We try to run the stills as much as possible. We have a 500-gallon still. We have a 900-gallon still. So if everything's right, we can get about 353-gallon size barrels every day we run the stills.
Damn.
And So we need the stills running. But the tough thing is we keep getting orders, and then we have to package or we have to can. And so, you know, I hired Ryan over from Wasatch.
Oh, Ryan's
and
down,
I want, you know, he's, we're trying to have him keep the stills running. And then I hired another Ryan, which has been amazing. And Steve, and it's, yeah, we're trying to keep the stills running as much as we possibly can.
Because you need a vacation, James.
I need a vacation.
You need to take a break.
But what most people don't understand is when you, doing a grain of glass distillery is a lot harder. I just can't pick up the telephone and call somebody and say, hey, send me out a truckload. Like, that's not an option. And that's, you know, that's not how we're going to function. And so it is, you know, we gotta get the grains. We try to grind everything the day before. It's, you know, it's like baking soda. You grind that grain, it's just absorbing flavor out of the air that you don't want.
Right.
And so you want that in the mash tun as quick as possible and get that starch converted over to sugar. And so it's hard to keep all of that going. And surprisingly, normally our biggest hiccup is getting the farmer to come get the grain at the very end, because we just can't put it down the sewer. And so, you know, it's kind of funny at the end of the day, like where your production hardships are, you
right.
know, it's like, how is a farmer, you know, that feeds this to the cattle
yeah.
as a hiccup?
It's a free feed for them.
Yeah.
And we save them. I mean, just for what we use over in Lehigh, it's got a 15 barrel setup, and that is, I think it saves my farmer almost 300 or 600 bucks a week.
Yeah.
You're like, holy cow. He's yeah. like, yeah, I'll come pick this shit up anytime.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, hell yeah. And the cool thing about it is to watch them be able to, you know, I don't have to put it down the drain. Like, we can utilize that.
Yeah.
It's going somewhere.
Yeah.
There's some breweries out there and distilleries that are self-sustaining. They go put it back in their mulch or feed their own, you know, cattle, and then it just comes back, whatever.
Yeah.
I wish we could do that in a
I know.
Perfect world, right?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I, yeah.
Right. When we had,
I dream about it all the time.
But do you think you're going to outgrow this space, or you've already outgrown this
yeah,
space?
Yeah, we have outgrown the
so
space.
So is there going to be a sugar house too, a sugar house?
There is. We are definitely in the works of getting a building. It's tough. We've had a building that we've almost jumped on, you know, two or three times, and it keeps coming back around. Hmm. And my wife's like, you're not losing this building this time. So, you know, hopefully it happens, and
yeah.
it will be a nice space. I mean, it's 18,000 square feet. I can't say that we're going to have a bar, you know, right up and going in the beginning, you know, with the way that interest rates are and stuff like that. We may have to move in and fix it up as we go and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, give us a couple of years, I think it's going to be really, really nice.
Does it have trench drains? Good floors?
It's got good floors, and it will have very nice drains in it.
Good.
So it actually was set up for paint, and so it's got really cool, like, to get the fire marshal in there, our insurance company. The building's awesome because it's already kind of been thought out with having paint stuff in there.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that part of it was like, oh, this is sweet. But
perfect.
Yeah, it doesn't have nice long drains.
Eventually, James.
It will. Eventually. No, and from day one, it will have nice long drains.
Good.
That is on the priority list.
Yes, absolutely. So, James, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and I got some questions we'll hit you with.
Awesome.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Outlaw Distillery's Bourbon Barrel Aged Hot Sauce is back on the shelves. Also, head on over to meet the newest distiller in our Outlaw family, Connor Kelly. With experience from places like High West, Connor helps turn up Outlaw's premium game. Head on over to Outlaw Distillery, located at 552nd West, 8360 South, Midvale, Utah, for a tour and tasting. Their staff is well-trained and leads with full passion. With homegrown grain to glass, Outlaw Distillery carries some of our favorite weekday sippers, like vanilla bean rum, spiced rum, honey bourbon, and that delicious bourbon whiskey. Trust us when we say it should be outlawed. It's so good. Yeah. Until the next spirits, my friends. Shout out to our sponsors, Clearwater Distilling. Utah County's only distillery is turning heads and quickly making a name for themselves. From whiskey to vodka, their unique innovation transforms the norm. With incredible products like their Rene Rimignac, which is an aged French Armagnac with an American rye whiskey twist. Literally one of our favorite showcasers. Or their Scandalous, which is not like Fireball, It's an actual whiskey with quality cinnamon without any sugary taste. Also, Clearwater teams up to do a monthly cigar pairing where you come and get educated on how to properly smoke a cigar while pairing with Clearwater's lovely spirits. For more information, head to clearwaterdistilling.com, hit them up on all social media platforms, or just message us and we'll get you started on the right path. Open 7 days a week, even on holidays. Clearwater is a must. See you there. Until the next spirits, my friends. All right, James, we're back. Refueled, ready to go. Ready for some questions?
Ready.
All right. You used to be a beer drinker.
Yeah.
All right. So have you ever thought about bringing beer makers into your still, making a mash, and then using the beer people's knowledge to make a beautiful barrel-aged something?
Yeah. Absolutely. I not only have we thought about it, we've done it.
Get out of here.
We've done it quite a few times. And I want you to taste some stuff. There's a company down in Northern California called Seven Stills.
Okay.
And they're a brewery and they're a distillery and they go buy other people's beer and they distill it. And after I had that, it was like, we need to kind of, you know, do some of these things.
Yeah.
And so I want you to try some stuff. We have a Doppelbach, and I'm sorry to say, but I legally can't say where it came from.
Okay.
And that was distilled. So to make bourbon, you have to distill it to 160 proof, and you can't, you can go under it, but you can't go over that 160.
Okay.
Well, if you get Canadian whiskey, you get Irish, Scotch, you can distill up to 180 is their vodka, but you can distill that 179, I believe it is.
Oh, wow.
And the more you distill it, so think about it, it's going to go through that distillation process. It's going to leave more flavor behind. And that's also confusing because I'm not talking about flavor as far as like peaty or smokiness, but if you just have a raw mash without that peaty smokiness, it's going to be a lot less flavorful than for say a bourbon that's distilled at 160, because 160 is going to leave a lot more of that flavor behind. So we took this beer and we distilled it, I think about 170. We put it in used barrels, and it's actually probably coming up on 3 years. And you get a slight little bit of the hops that come through on this. You get a little bit of I get a little bit of nut in here. And this is also going to be probably at least 130 proof, somewhere in there. This is going to drink like you might not even need to add any water. This will also be a release here pretty soon.
The hell?
And good. So with the Boilermaker series, we really found out there is no like perfect time to pull it out of the barrel. The sooner you pull it out of the barrel, you're going to have more of the beer influence. So our Boilermaker series, I think the last one
was the cider one, right?
No, on the Bewildered.
Bewilder.
We only left it in the barrel 90 days. But the beautiful thing about that is you get the bourbon and you get the beer. And the cider one is actually just opposite, where we left it in the barrel, I think like a year and a half, closer to two. And you start to get, you probably get a more well-balanced spirit the longer it sits in there. But you also lose some of that, you know, what you're trying to show. And I would say the same is true for this. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that the Mountain West Cider is any better or worse than the Bewildered. Like, it's just a different spirit. And so it's kind of preference. Like, what do you want to taste? This, the hops shine through like crazy.
I'm getting crazy hops.
For probably the first year, no matter what. It was so hop forward. And then after the hops, you just get that malted barley, that sweetness.
You almost said nutty.
The nutty comes through.
Like, it really is right there.
Yeah.
Right down the center.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to put some water in it. Even, you know, I said it could drink at that, but
This like tastes so familiar though. It's bugging me.
You know it.
Mmm. It's so familiar. Oh my God.
It's been around for a long time.
Oh, I'm excited to try some water. Some of my water, James. Oh my God.
I think if you look at that tag, it might say it on it.
That's exactly what I thought it was.
So, isn't that crazy?
That's so crazy.
So, I mean, kind of the story behind this.
Wow.
This was sent over for hand sanitizer. We received 220 kegs. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, it was like, you know what? We got to make some whiskey out of this.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
So, we distilled up almost all of it. And then think it was a tough time. COVID. We couldn't call friends and be like, hey, you know, come drink this beer.
Yeah.
It was like we were all trying to stay away from each other.
You can drink it outside. I'll throw you one.
Yeah, exactly. And so, towards the end, we called them and said, hey, do you have a problem if we do this? They were like, no, we love the idea. And hence, you know, almost 3 years later, this is what it is.
That's very easy. When you put a little bit of water in it, it's so easy. You still get... I get less of the malt character and more of those. Man, that's deja vu at the ass, man. Yeah. This is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't drank a beer side by side it yet.
Oh, I bet you it would.
I will pretty soon. It
will blow your mind because had one not too long ago and it's kind of like, wow. So going, you mentioned hand sanitizer. So let's go to that real quick. When the world shut down and ended, I feel as though distilleries became more of a thing. Ever since then, I've heard more about distilleries. I've seen more movement from distilleries. I've seen people drink more from distilleries.
Yeah.
Is that because you guys all of a sudden were the ones that came out with shields and swords flexing and be like, hey, we can help?
Yeah.
Because you guys came to the rescue in means. I didn't see a single brewery say, hey, we can help. No, we all got shut down.
But the breweries did help. They sent us beer to turn into hand sanitizer.
Sure. But then you guys were like, hey, we can still do something with this, right? And so people saw you still working when the rest of us were down.
Yeah.
So I feel like you guys kind of got almost like a reawakening. Did the COVID actually help you guys? Well, I mean.
Oh, yeah. It was
resurgence?
Huge. Yeah. It was huge. For us, I remember, you know, talking to some of the other distillers and the big organizations, you know, everybody was like, don't do hand sanitizer. You know, the FDA is going to come after people. But really, you just started like digging down deep. Like, you got to do it. Like, you know, people are calling like hand sanitizer, hand sanitizer. I had a CEO of a major hospital here in town call me and be like, what's it going to take to get you guys to do this? And you start like, your gut just starts like, I got to figure this out. Like, I really got to figure this out. And I remember I called an attorney I work with and he was like, do not touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Really?
Basically hung up the phone. I called one of my other partners and he's like, just do the right thing. And hung up the phone. I'm like, we're making hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
You know, I remember sending a text off to some of the other distillers and they were like, great. We need it.
It's a tough time, man.
People need it.
So weird. It was a what the fuck moment. Yeah. The world shut down.
Yeah.
It was so eerie.
On my cell phone, one day, I sat it down. I had 2,600 telephone calls in less than 6 hours.
Excuse me?
2,600. Yeah. It was crazy.
Wow.
It was the coolest thing to pick up your cell phone and say, you had 2,600
I can't. Calls. Did you screenshot that?
I would screenshot.
Oh, you should have.
I
man.
Know.
Oh, my God.
But then there was a day that it was really cool. We had hand sanitizer. So we would kind of get it. Then we wouldn't. Then we would. Saltfire had hand sanitizer. And, you know, I started saying like, hey, we're out today, but you can go buy Saltfire. They got it.
Across the street.
And not Saltfire, Salt Flats.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
You know, and then,
But
we were just trying to like send each other. Well, and people would think that Salt Flats was Saltfire. So right. Ryan loved it because Ryan's like, hey, man, everybody's coming over here.
Yeah, take the business.
Place.
Yeah.
And, but it was just, it just became a thing like just help them, just figure out how to help them. And it was a huge, huge growth for us. Our 900 gallon still
brought to you by hand sanitizer. I mean,
wow. Is it a bumper sticker on there?
Yeah, it should be, because that's really what paid for it. And, you know, we gave away to the fire department, the police department, old, you know, retirement houses, some hospitals. And there were people that received federal money, and we sold it to them. And, you know, but I was very selective of, if we're selling it, I have to feel like at least that, you know, it's somebody
utilized and not toilet paper fiasco where everyone's just hoarding it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we were pretty picky. I mean, I hate to say it, but we were picky on who got it and who didn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wanted it to go to good use and not be resold at a convenience store for, you know, double or triple the price.
Ridiculous. Yeah. That's just taking advantage of us. We're trying to just make a living or trying to survive this world ending thing, right?
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is there's not too many stills in Utah that can distill to 190 proof. So they're very far and in between. And so when some people source their alcohol, where we actually have the capacity to distill it, we could distill ours in-house, sell it. Well, at the same time, a lot of people didn't notice, but a lot of the vodka in the stores was gone because that neutral grain that people buy to make vodka was all used for hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. So not only that, but we were one of the only stock shelves at the liquor store with our product because we weren't using all of the neutral grain to use it for hand sanitizer. That's so it was really kind cool. of a double whammy for us that the vodka still continued on the shelves and we supplied hand sanitizer.
Look at you, James. So COVID kind of helped in a way.
It did. Right? It did.
Which is good. You survived.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have been belly up after COVID.
Yeah.
We saw some breweries. I don't know if we saw any distilleries go bottom up. But it's interesting to see how when the chips are down, we still have good come from it, right?
Yeah.
And thanks for doing that, man.
Yeah. No, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you went home. You know, my daughter would come help. And it was just kind of it really was rewarding. We had a ton of people offer to come fill bottles and do things.
Oh, sick.
We'd have a fun time. Like it was, good. You just felt good about
Six
it.
6 feet apart though.
Yeah. And masks and gloves. But we had plenty of hand sanitizer.
You're right. Throw each other. Yeah. So James, I got another question for you when it comes to challenges when it comes to products. Yeah. Products you haven't released. Are we going to ever see a gin or a tequila or some type of anything new from Sugar House?
Yeah. We think about a gin every day. So that new 900 gallon still, I put a gin basket on it.
Ooh.
So the option to do it. Gin's tough. We have a lot of really good gin in Utah. We have a lot of really good craft made gin in Utah. And the bar is pretty high. I mean, you take what New World, you know, Allen, Beehive, Hammer Springs, you know what I mean? And so it's been tough. We have so many products. It's been tough to keep up with what we have. Mm. Gin's on the short list. I dream about maybe not a tequila, but a mezcal every day. Like,
man,
you know, seeing some of the whiskey, you geek out. Like, it's all about chemistry. It's all about doing things the proper way. You're checking pH levels. You're checking, you know, everything's perfect. You know, tequila, maybe more mezcal, is more about open the windows, let natural yeast in. Like, you know, it's really, you talk about terroir, like it is 100%, you know, it's just like everything about it.
Right.
And so, you know, and obviously we can't make that. And I've thought about, you know, doing a blue agave or something. New World does a great job with that. I would say gin is definitely, you know, probably on the short list of something. Right. Down the road.
Are we ever going to see UK even make a cinnamon whiskey?
Probably not.
Why, James?
Probably not.
Why? So I have to stick to Fireball?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to say we're the whiskey purists.
Gotcha. So you want to keep it, you're not going to do a peanut butter whiskey?
Yeah, we're not doing a peanut butter whiskey.
Not that it's bad. Just, you know.
Well, that was kind of the canned cocktail thing. It was
you caved to that, at least.
We caved to the canned cocktails. It was like, do we do a flavored whiskey or do we do canned cocktails?
No.
It was like, canned cocktails.
Canned cocktails.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we going to see new canned cocktail flavors?
I would hope so. I would really hope so.
Peach one or some type of...
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I look forward to doing some more canned cocktails.
Hell yeah. What's your R&D look like when it comes to the canned cocktails? How do you go about figuring that shit out?
So we had Tom, and a lot of the reason I brought Tom on was the canned cocktails. Tom owned Garwood's Ginger Beer. And Tom, I mean, he shared that passion with me. Like, he was so passionate about beverages and how everything was made. And I watched him open up Garwood's, and, you know, he'd come over, help me with figuring out stuff, bottling. I'd help him. And Tom eventually came to work for me one day, and that was a big part of it. You know, Tom and I sat down. The canned cocktails, according to the people that we get our flavoring from now, you know, we did an ass backwards. But ass backwards is the right way to do it. You know, it's like when your dad tells you, like, you do everything the hard way. And that's exactly kind of what happened with that. I mean, we literally made bitters out of everything. So we basically, you know, steeped the Meyer lemons, and we took each flavor, we put it all together, and then we went to the flavor houses and said, here, replicate this. Like, we want it to taste exactly like this. And it was the funnest process. Like,
I bet
it was. I mean, every day doing the whiskey cola, tasting Coke, tasting Pepsi, tasting RC cola isn't fun when they're room temperature. You've gotten all the carbonation out of them. They're not good. They're not good at all.
It's like drinking Tab.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. but you got to, like, understand kind of the raw flavor of no carbonation or none of that.
Gross.
In each one of those. And so those are some of the funnest days, actually.
Really?
Because, you know, because more or less we're just kind of like putting bitter, bitter, bitter and, you know, and carbonation and that alcohol and seeing what that flavor
tastes
like.
That's cool. I see that.
Stuff,
I just damn you for making the cola one, because I won't drink that anymore because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't.
Yeah.
It's too good.
And our cola, I mean, that was totally from scratch. I mean, it is totally from scratch. And I don't know if we can get whiskey on the open market or something like that, we may keep it around, and we may, you know, it may be in the liquor store in the future.
That'd be really cool. So, really cool. I want to ask your Boilermaker series, what's the next brewery or someone locally you're going to bring on to make that series happen?
Our next series is going to be the Winnebaba.
I guess after that one,
That one.
Because you gotta think about these ahead of time, right?
Yeah. So my dream is probably Kevin over at Templeton. And we've talked...
At TF Brewing?
Yeah, TF.
Yeah.
We've talked a few times on that of, let's do something. He's like, call me up. But it's just, when we have bourbon ready, it just seems like there hasn't been a good fit.
Mm.
Or when he's had a cool barrel, it's like, we don't have bourbon ready. And so that's been the tough thing, is to get...
Gotcha.
To kind of get on the same wavelength.
A Templin Boilermaker, huh? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. You should do one with Fisher.
Fisher, I'm game with
the Fisher boys doing. I want to see the Fisher boys and some bourbon. Yeah. Let's go. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. Are we ever going to see, I don't know how you're going to do this, but I'm a huge advocate of collaborations. Yeah. Are we ever going to see a Sugar House collab with another distillery?
So here's the problem with that. We had four distilleries, not local, basically Ballast Point, except for it was the Devil's Share on their spirit side. Some people in Montana, some people up in Washington. But the problem is we can only sell it at our place. So whoever ends up finishing it in Utah can only sell it.
Damn.
And so that's the tough thing. Like, if we did something with Alan or Ashley or Outlaw, we could only, whoever packaged that. And this was the old DABC. Administration kind of saying that.
So why not try again?
And so we could possibly try again and see if we could
do it,
you know, to get that, to be able to say, well, hey, you know, to me, more than likely, it would have to be a grain to glass distillery, or not a grain to glass distillery, but a grain to glass product that was put in together. But it would have to be able to be sold at the multiple locations.
Right. So what about doing something where it starts local, like, let's say James Weed's malt, right? Then it came to you guys, or let's say you can mash it either way, or you have a recipe and let's say Outlaw has a recipe or the same recipe. You both mash it together. You both do it. You guys maybe do half and half the barrels.
Yeah.
It can still happen that way, right?
Yeah. No, I would love to take like half of their bourbon, half of our bourbon, you know,
can
age
you blend?
It.
Can we blend?
Yeah, absolutely.
Distillery.
Yeah, absolutely. And Put it in a barrel and put another year, two, 3 years.
See, why
on
not?
It.
I say we do Outlaws, you know,
something like that.
I like to see Outlaws rum with Distillery 36's rum in a barrel, or like a Sugar House barrel or something. And you finished it, but like, I think it's doable in a different way.
No, I think about the cherry blossom up at New World, and then take our malt whiskey barrel, put cherry blossom, maybe put like, I don't know, 10 bottles in there, let it sit in that barrel just by itself for like 6 months, kind of get in that wood, put our malt whiskey in there. It would be more of a cocktail, like, but I think about that all the time.
Make it happen, James. Because I feel like here's another thing where I'm going with this is every single distiller I interview has nothing but good things to say about James Fowler.
Yeah.
Like, brother, you are someone that you're respected in the industry. You're well looked at, you're humble, and you're very kind, and you're passionate. And that passion is seeping through the entire industry. So I feel like if anyone's going to get this done, brother, it's you.
Yeah. Well, so, we'll see.
Yeah, make it happen, dude. Yeah. If you're not going to take a vacation, then go fucking make a collaboration happen.
Kidding. Yeah, let me put that on the list. My wife's going to love that.
Collaboration before vacation.
Yeah. As soon as I get that done, we'll go on a vacation.
Yeah, there you go. Boom, I'm down. Yeah. But I feel like it can happen. Because I love seeing breweries do it. And I like when you guys get your stuff. I like seeing breweries utilize distilleries. Whether it's I made a bad beer, or instead of dumping a beer, I'm going to give it to a distillery, or, hey, I have a cool beer I want to put in your bourbon barrel or your rum barrel or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I would love that.
And I don't know, going back to beer, Beehive just released something very similar. Yeah. I had no clue. It was kind of funny because I heard that. I'm like, we basically both did the exact same thing. And I really do need to get over and see Chris and get a bottle of it. Because I think they'll complement each other. I think, you know, if people are listening, pick up a bottle of Beehive and pick up a bottle of ours, and they're going to be two totally different things. Like, but they're going to be two really cool things at the same time.
Yeah, and all local and great stuff. And
yeah.
I think, if I recall, the Beehive one, because you guys had, it was post-dry hop too, right?
Yeah.
Because theirs was post-dry hop as well.
Yeah.
They did the same technique.
Yeah. So, will you hand me that experimental bottle?
Uh-oh.
So, this is another one. We got to be a little bit careful with this because I don't want to ruin your taste buds, but
we got to hear the story about this one. This one's a cool story. I remember you telling me this when we were at the Grid City Music Fest. You were telling me about this.
Yeah. So this is a triple IPA from Talisman Brewing up in Ogden. And Dusty called me and he just said, hey, I got my triple A. And it was during COVID and maybe that was the reason. I have no idea why he sent it down to me. It wasn't a lot. It was maybe 100, 150 gallons. They were in the blue totes. There's probably three of them. So let's say 150 gallons.
Okay.
We had to water it down, which really worried me into our still. So we're probably at 3%. I don't know.
Typically
maybe
at 4%. Six, right?
Yeah, I think it might even be higher than 6. Mm. And so it was like, let's water it down. And that way we can get it into the still. And we distilled it. I want to say we took it up a little bit higher too, to maybe like 170. You have never had anything like this.
No, I probably not.
It's almost like the back end of it is a little bit, maybe a little 420-ish.
Really? Oh, so it's got some dankness to it, huh?
Yeah, like and it makes sense because you know, it's all the same family, the hops, and you know, and
yeah,
so
they're cousins.
Yeah, they're cousins, and it comes through really, really strong at the back end. But I mean, can you believe that floral just on the smell? Like,
it smells like an IPA.
Yeah. This is the most crazy. But anyways, we distilled it, and it was hideous. Like it was like the worst thing you'd ever smell. And some really cool things happened. Like the proteins came together. There was almost like a brain in our still. Like the oils, everything came together. There was just this big ball of mass in there. And we took it out, we smelled it. It smelled like moldy grass clippings. Just terrible. But it was just kind of like, I don't got time for this. And we put it in a used barrel. I wasn't going to spend the money on a brand new barrel. And, you know, we broke her off the used barrel. So it was just kind of like, not a big deal. And literally, you know, I think Dusty called me. I'm like, I don't think so. I'll probably turn it into hand sanitizer. Because when we turn something into hand sanitizer, we would take it up to 190 proof. So like we're making vodka. And the more you distill, you're just taking all the flavor out. Like 100% of the flavor is coming out. The more you distill, the more you distill. And then I just kind of forgot about it. And Dusty called me, you know, 2 years later, like, hey, we're coming down to a jazz game. We want to stop by to see you. And, oh, by the way, whatever happened with that? And it's like, oh, let's try it. When you get here, we'll go open the barrel and see what it is.
And this is it.
This is it.
So it's got like a nice grapefruit nose to it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Citrus peel.
Yeah. It's definitely got that citrus.
I'm like nervous to try it, James. I'm not going to lie. I swear, I did a double take to the mouth.
When my employees saw me with that bottle, they're like, where did you get that? Isn't that, that's proofed at 100. That malt comes through really, really soft and gentle.
It's like an orange candy.
Yeah, isn't that just like,
whoa.
You know, and I think some people were afraid. Well, I think we're going to keep the experimental series going. I think that's going to be a new series. The next release on the Doppelbach, I think that will also go under the experimental line. I think a lot of people lost out on it because they were like, I'm worried.
This is really cool, though.
Isn't it?
I know someone that has a bunch of Saison you can put for your next experimental
Yeah, bring
series.
It up.
Oh, this is really cool, actually. This is really neat.
And I mean, this is the coolest thing ever about, you got to try it. You got to do it. You know, you got to sit on it. Nothing comes quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the future.
That's fun.
And it's awesome when you open up something and be like, you know, this is a hit or this is a failure, you know? So
it's almost like a Greyhound. It's kind of like that almost gin-esque.
Yeah.
Man, this is really cool. Well done, James. Well, that's really cool. The experimental series is where you can be that craft distiller and experiment. And this is really cool. This is something different.
Yeah.
Man, that's...
I haven't had that for a while. That's
it's a nice little treat.
It's crazy on that. So
I'm going to put some water in it now.
Yeah. Take that down a little bit.
I put water in everything. If you want some of my water, James, you're more than welcome to try.
Yeah. real water.
If you want some quality water.
Yeah. I'm probably killing you with this, huh?
No.
You're like, it's out of a plastic bottle.
Kirkland, only the best.
Yeah.
I liked it better without the water.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. A lot of times we water things way down. Sometimes on a lower proof, you can pick out flaws.
Mm.
And so especially distilling off the still, you know, we may taste it right off the still. We don't want to ruin our palate ever. So you got to be careful about that. But the distillate, a lot of times we will water down, bring it, I mean, really low, like 40 proof, 50 proof, somewhere in there. And you can definitely start to pick out flaws.
Yeah, I like the non-watered version better.
Yeah.
Still fun. This is really cool, James. This is really cool. So you have a couple more. Is there a beer out there that you want to do an experimental series with? Have you gone to a lot of breweries lately or seen a lot of...
No, I haven't done a great job with that.
I was going to say, is there like a beer you're like, I just want to put that in a barrel? Like,
yeah.
Like sometimes I see some of our family... make a beer and I'm like, motherfucker, like you have the Baba in barrels. I've always thought to put the Baba in a barrel.
Yeah.
Just put, and they, da-da, right? Yeah. Have you ever seen a beer? You're like, I want that in one of my barrels so bad.
Yeah, I have. Well, I wanted their barrel to put to do the Boilermaker series.
Mm.
And that's a Red Rock with the Dandelion.
Oh. Oh my God! Yes, I know you're talking about not the Marvella, but it's the. It's gonna kill me.
I know.
Erica Palmer will kill me if I don't get it right. Oh my God! Yes, I know what you're talking about.
I bet the bummer thing is that's a no char barrel.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was like, I don't think we're gonna pick up anything. Like, I don't think it's gonna absorb, you know. And so we kind of decided against it. But really, it was just like, you know, that would be the coolest thing to pull that Belgium flavor out, because I get that. I'm assuming they use a Belgium yeast on that.
I'm assuming too, yeah.
And Yeah, I just thought that flavor profile would be so nice. Oh,
it's going to bug me. That name's going to bug me. I see the label right in my eyes. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be cool. That'd be a fun one. Have you ever thought about using a different barrel you've never used before?
Yeah, so we do have some French oak. We have quite a bit of French oak, actually. Mm. And when people say that oak or wood doesn't matter, it matters a lot. The French oak is a totally different character than the American oak. I get a lot of spiciness the first few years. It actually, so like rye going into those French oak barrels, it seems like it actually spices it back up, and you almost need it to be in there for that year and a half to kind of bring it back down and around. Hmm. And so it is cool. I mean, it's the neatest thing in the world when we get another barrel. The malt whiskey that's in the French oak right now, and I've thought about that too, is do we put it into into another finish? And they call that a cigar. Like if we took a port barrel or a sherry barrel, you know, it would have been in the wine barrel, then the port, and then it would qualify for that cigar whiskey classification.
Sign me up.
But at the same time, it's so good now. I'm just like, I think more than likely we're going to leave it.
I think the biggest reason why I don't dabble into the distilling world is because I don't have that patience you have, James. I just don't.
I don't know where I got it. I don't know where I got it.
Bless your wife's heart is all I got to say. Well, when it comes to the Utah distilling scene right now, who do you think's slaying it at the moment? Give some shout outs. Who do you think is killing it at the moment?
I mean, I know that a lot of people are going to say this, but I think Alan, Ashley, and Chris at New World, you know, Alan at Water Pocket. I love the direction of Outlaw. I love everything. Tyler.
You brought on Connor.
I don't know Connor at all. I think it's got to be a great new hire, a great pickup. I'm really, really excited. I think that, you know, Outlaw's had some major leaps and bounds in the last, you know, year or two.
Yeah.
And, you know, props off to those guys.
Good. What's something that's not happening in the distilling scene here in Utah that you want to see in the distilling scene?
Not happening in the distilling scene. It's hard because a little bit of it, I hate to use the DABC or the state as a holdback. But a lot of things are. I mean, we are really kind of held back. You know, you go back to, you know, working with other distilleries and stuff like that. It's just sometimes those rules are so hard to do some of those things. Because the first thing that comes to my mind is going back to those co-ops of doing something, you know, with somebody else. But, and we have a couple projects that we're working on that they're doing out of state. I just don't want to talk about them, but they're kind of pretty cool. You know?
Yes, I love this. Yes, so. I love it. Do you think there's gonna be more distilleries coming here in Utah?
My advice would be not to do it.
Why?
I mean, it really, really would. It's just so, it's hard because it's so challenging with the way that the state of Utah is ran. And, you know, Tiffany at the DABS is doing amazing leaps and bounds with working with local. But if you're not inside the bubble of the ordering system of the state, it's almost impossible to maintain a distillery. So Tyler and Kurt before that owned Outlaw, they did an amazing job with getting walk-in business and they lived off that walk-in business. That's where their income came from, but you can't sustain that. That's not going to do it. Hmm. And maybe if you were, you know, in a tourist spot, like, you know, down in Zions or something, maybe you could pick up some good business, but that's a really hard way to run a company. And you need that distribution. And when you have one customer and only one customer in the whole entire state, and if they're not willing to sell you, or they're only willing to put you in five stores, and that's what, so, you know, Tiffany's done some great things, and I think you can submit a product, and you're not guaranteed. You know, that's the thing people don't realize. Just that you open up a distillery, you're not guaranteed any business whatsoever from the state of Utah.
Yeah,
and probably only 50% of us are really in the state store.
Damn.
And so you have people that are just needing people walking through that front door.
Yeah.
And that's what's so sad. That's probably why I wouldn't do it. But trust me, I mean, if somebody wants to do something, I mean, I try to, if somebody calls me, everybody calls me like, I got this secret recipe. I try not to just say like, go away, this isn't a good idea. Because I get it. If you got the passion and you got the drive, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
And I try not to kill that spark. Like, I think that's the most important thing. And I don't know if that person has that spark. And so at least try to help them. And, you know, maybe I don't need to deal with them, but give them an hour, give them 2 hours and let them decide, you know, if they really want to go fight the battle.
Yeah.
And they have what it takes, you know, and a lot of ours was, I think we were in at the right time. We got in the early days. And you know, things were a little bit different and the competition wasn't so big, but it gave us time to build a brand in a little bit easier situation.
Yeah. Damn, James. So tell you what, I like what you're doing. I like what your team's coming up with. I like the patience you have, man. You're an example to me when it comes to, how to see a business and a passion thrive. Like today you're giving me hope, because sometimes I get down on myself as a brewer, as a, I don't know what you want to call me, a podcaster.
Yeah.
I don't like being called an influencer. I'm just trying to be a connector.
Yeah.
But sometimes I get down, right? You know, I get like, damn, is this even worth it? You know? But to sit here and watch someone that's been in the game for how much longer, and then you're telling me the things behind the scenes, like, holy shit. Like, that passion needs to be the driving force.
Yeah.
And so thanks for being an example for me, James. Yeah. And thanks for your kindness ever since day one when you're 10, you know, ate shit.
But let me tell you, your passion leaks through to me too, because your drive, I mean, I was worried today I wasn't gonna be able to keep up with you. Like, you know what I mean? You're exciting. Your positivity is just insane, you know? And it is hard. You know, it's a roller coaster ride. You know, you have good days, you got bad days.
Yeah.
And yeah, to anybody that can help on those bad days to get us back up to those good days.
Absolutely.
It's important. It's a really important thing.
And so, it's okay to say you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I don't like the hiding, the don't have shame and guilt.
Yeah.
If you're sad, just tell me you're sad. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry you're feeling sad.
Yeah.
Can I give you a hug? You know, or whatever. Yeah. Right. And so sometimes I just need a hug, or someone just needs a, hey, you got this.
Yeah.
Right. You just want to be heard. That's, I think, what it is. People want to be heard.
Exactly.
And that's where I've tried to put a microphone in front of people's faces. Like, I'll hear you.
Yeah.
I'll give you 2-3 hours of your time, or of my time, just to hear you.
Yeah.
And once you feel heard and validated, man, you can do anything after that.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. People are surprising what they can pull off.
Yeah.
So but just got to let them do it.
So thanks for giving me time, your busy time, and sit down with me and have a great experience and showcase some of your awesome spirits. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And the passion's there, man. I haven't had a bad product here yet.
No, thank you.
I haven't drank the hand sanitizer yet.
Yeah, like, not
if
yet.
If I drink that, maybe I'll have a bad time.
Yeah, that might not be so good.
No, but is there anything I can do as a brewer or as a tastemaster or in the community to help you or help Sugar House
out? No, you are killing it right now. Like, I mean, you're doing exactly what you're doing. You're out spreading the word. You're getting the word out. We need everybody to support local. Like, we need it. We really need it. And I love it that you're allowing us the voice to do that. And, you know, you make us all look great.
Well, good. I mean, I tried to, man. Yeah. But James, thank you so much for today. I can't wait to see what comes from you. And if there's anything you can, I can do for you, please let me know. And if there's anything in the community that you need, just reach out. All of us, we're here as a family, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Until the next spirit, my friends. Cheers, homie.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. Find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, Twitter at @TheTastemasters, or on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, DM us for any questions, or leave a review. Tell your friends, and thanks for listening. Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.